Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Chris, I hope you had a great Christmas. Here we are leading up to New Year's. What's exciting for you? What are you thinking about?
I'm just stunned of kind of how everything's come full circle. This is episode 50, and we launched last year at the Smart Region event, and that's right around the corner. So it's just years flown by as well. So a lot to think about. How about you?
Yeah, it's been a journey, right? I can't believe it's been almost a year already. You know, we launched at the summit. The summit's around the corner, which I'm excited to talk about in probably the next episode. It's been a good ride, and I just look forward to where the journey takes us and what we might think about and do through the podcast mechanism next year.
Here's the 2022. Well, cool. So who's our guest? How do you know him?
Yeah, David Graham, Chief Innovation Officer for the City of Carlsbad. I've known David for quite a number of years. Again, one of the kind of preeminent national leaders in the smart city space, you know, runs in the same circles with us, with Jen and Tyler in Colorado, and people like Peachtree and Aaron Deacon in Kansas City. So been a great friend, a great mentor for a long time. I've gone to Barcelona with him quite often to the Smart City Expo. Just, again, a tremendous friend, and he's done tremendous work with the city of San Diego and now the city of Carlsbad. He's going to have a lot of great perspective for our audience on, you know, just how to run an innovation shop within a city and what you need to look at, what you should be thinking about. And then also the stuff he's doing with Harvard, I think will be a really cool opportunity for cities listening to engage him in the program to further themselves professionally. So
yeah, that was really a great experience she brought me into a couple of weeks ago. So should we get him on? I'm excited.
Yeah, let's bring David in. Here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Hey, David, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
Real pleasure to be here with you guys.
Great to see you, David.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We found the best way to get acquainted with the audience is just talk about yourself. Just give them some background about you. What do you want the podcast audience to know as a person, maybe your background, and we'll kind of get to Carlsbad and your current role in a minute.
Well, I always like that human approach because, you know, the people behind the story really are what the story is about. And mine's an interesting one to some extent. You know, I never found that I thought that I'd be in technology or in government when I was in college. I came to San Diego and found myself interning for a mayor or I could intern for a radio station because I was the president of the debate team and ran our college radio station. And I tell you, back then, it was a toss-up. Radio was a pretty cool gig, you know, being a DJ and that sort of thing. But the better side of me decided, hey, you know, I want to try this mayor thing out and see what happens. And, you know, shockingly from there, I really fell in love with local government. And I went from there. I worked for the county as a senior policy advisor. Spent 4 years in the private sector doing government affairs, stuff all up and down the state of California. Got brought back to work for another mayor, ended up working for a total of three mayors, but then also found like the politics is lots of fun, but you know, it seems like a lot of times the stuff that's really getting done is on the operational side. And so before landing here in Carlsbad, I was the deputy chief operating officer for smart and sustainable communities at the city of San Diego and ran about a quarter of the city. So departments like planning, land use, economic development. And though we didn't have a formal innovation space there, a lot of the innovative things were happening in both when I was under neighborhood services and then doing smart and sustainable communities. So things like, you know, bringing UC San Diego in and top teachers and researchers to actually at our branch libraries be doing certificate programs and things like Python and the like, bringing the first all-electric car share fleet to North America to San Diego. And then using IoT to do some incredible things, multi-purpose things around parking and the like. It was a really great run. At the same time, I got really interested in the question about what about medium-sized cities? You know, there are much more of those around the country, around the globe. What sort of impact can you have in a medium-sized city? And that's when I took the job as the very first chief innovation officer in the region, which was a brand new position that the city of Carlsbad, just up the coast from San Diego, you may know it as the home of Legoland, the Omni La Costa Resort, but also 7 miles of beaches, the largest desal plant on the West Coast. It even has an airport. And I thought, this is a pretty unique place to try to get some stuff done. So I've been doing that for about 3 years, which has been incredibly rewarding. We get to lead a lot of regional efforts, but also gave me time to deepen the work that I was doing with Harvard's Technology and Entrepreneurship Center, where we launched the very first executive certificate program in civic innovation. All this is just sort of a laundry list of things. It doesn't tell you who I am. I love
it. Yeah, it still gives a feel for what you've done. In fact, we just had Eric Caldwell on the show too, which is interesting. He referenced you. Not sure if you guys compared notes coming on, but that's cool. Although I do feel like we might have missed out on the next generation Calvin Harris if he would have gone the other direction. It'd be a lot richer.
Well, with Eric, you might have missed out on the next Gordon Ramsay. That yeah. man can cook, I'll tell you that much.
Wow, awesome. That's awesome. Well, awesome. David, great background. So, all right, we've got to ask you the token question. I mean, I'm sure we've been asked this question on panels together for the last 4 years or so, but we actually enjoy getting the, you know, the guest perspective of what a smart city is, just because we've had so many guests with so many different backgrounds. It's been really interesting to see the responses. So, you know, David, give us, what's your perspective of smart cities? How do you define it? How do you approach it? And what do you think's working and what's not working? And then we'll jump into the chief innovation officer position hereafter.
Well, for me, I kind of have evolved. The term smart cities has turned into something that just about you can throw anything at. It is the utility term that just about everybody wants to use. And so for me, it's moved even further into this idea of connected communities. But the basic definition is the use of data and technology to improve decision making and people's lives. And that fundamentally is all about connectivity. It's about technology connectivity, whether it's fiber, whether it's wireless, whether it's 5G or whichever G is going to come next. I believe 6 is the next one in line, and they're already working on it. But it also is about connections with people, because we have seen across the country, across the globe, very innovative technologies that could solve real problems that cities are facing be completely rejected because people did not take into account the human element. Whether it's privacy, whether it's use of data, whether it's cultural resistance inside of an organization, whether it's one mayor being a big smart cities mayor and the next mayor, well, of course, I can't be a smart cities mayor. That was the last guy's gig. You know, whether it's a city manager that's big on it and new elected officials come in. Ultimately, this comes down to defining challenges and solving them, whether with technology or not. The term smart really kind of came from this idea of being able to better use sensors and data and analytics to understand how your city lives and breathes. But I think the smartest part, if you're delving into it, is how you address and deal with people. We have catalytic folks that have driven it at the city level, at the regional level, at the state level, at the global level. Yeah, not all of us get the luxury of being Singapore, where you have alignment of both a city and a country all together. I was just doing a thing with them for OpenGov Asia, and it is different talking to them when you don't have these layers of bureaucracy, but they have their own challenges, right?
Yeah.
When I think about a smart city, it is about that use of data and technology to improve decision-making and lives, but there has to be a catalyst. And I know, you know, in the Phoenix metro region, Dom, you've been an incredible catalyst. There are others around the region. And oftentimes it is not a person who's willing to take risks, help people see things a new and different way. And whether that is at the mayoral level, the city manager level, or in your innovation space, I'm excited about the fact that we're creating this network of cities that believe that competitiveness comes from collaboration. Totally. And the sharing that we've seen in the United States especially, and we've been doing some of this, Dom, between our regions, that shared knowledge, that is what we have to do. We have to collaborate to compete. And the smartest cities that are becoming smart cities or smarter cities are doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. I couldn't agree with you more. That collaboration is this new competitive advantage. And I just love the idea of your particular focus on addressing and dealing with the people. I mean, I just have to say, because I want the audience to hear, you got to talk about what you did around the streetlights. And did I hear, was there a party? How did you engage the people on that? Because our City of Scottsdale team still talks about that when we were able to meet here recently. Talk about how you engage people around that project, because it's just amazing.
So technology can be really complex and it can make no sense. And when you start talking bits and bytes, and when you start talking about LiDAR versus camera versus whatever, people turn off, right? And yet the whole point of us using these technologies and deploying them and the use of data associated with them is to solve problems that are fundamentally the problems that people care about, that our elected officials care about. And so we struck upon this idea of how do we translate this idea of what sensors could do in a city. And we thought, what if we threw a block party for streetlight sensors? And at that block party, you know, food and bands and big like paint on the canvas mural where you could write, you know, I believe an intelligent city could be, and then everybody would write on that. It took that complex technology and it pulled the human aspect. And we also sourced a lot of really good ideas. You know, most of us have done a hackathon with technologists and with students, but when a mom and dad are walking down the street and they're writing on the wall with their, you know, 6-year-old kid there, and I ask them, hey, why are you here? Why do you care about streets? And they say, well, we live just down the street from our school, but we drive the very short distance. We'd rather walk, but we don't know if it's safe. Could your streetlights make our commute safer? If we knew that, then we'd walk to school every day. And it's those human elements. It's those human stories that have such an incredible impact. At the same time, if you miss that part, if you miss the human element, you can spend ridiculous sums of money and get nothing out of it because of the political backlash or community backlash that you could face.
Totally. Totally. Such a good story. So powerful. And hey, why can't you have a block party for streetlights? You just gotta love it for local governments. All right, David, so let's jump into the Chief Innovation Officer position at Carlsbad. Talk to us about what that position is. How is it structured? Obviously, I know a lot of cities that we're talking to is thinking about a Chief Innovation Officer position. So help us understand the position, and then we'll kind of talk about what you're working on.
So what structure? So we've seen Chief Innovation Officers in the mayor's office and the city manager's office. Usually it's a small person or a group of people that are focused on things like performance analytics, data and data work and innovation, doing proof of concepts. I see it really as this role of instigator, inspirer, and also collaborator. In my particular role, I think one of the things that we really got right that I'm starting to see other medium-sized cities do is we combined the innovation role that has both an internal and external role in continuous improvement with the city, combined with our economic development functions. And particularly for a place like Carlsbad that has global headquarters of places like Viasat, you know, all things digital for Walmart are headquartered at Walmart Labs in Carlsbad. We have a video game design community, including Warner Brothers Games, Jam City. You know, there's all these companies that there is talent and opportunity if you can tap into that. And so when we bring together the creativity of the private sector, and we're able to support things like startups, we are not only trying to solve problems or create products for everyone, we're also creating a unique pipeline to be able to address and solve the problems inside of the city as well, or the challenges that our residents are facing. And so my role is really that central point. We work across the entire city. Our We Innovate program has several elements. So we'll go into departments and we'll do innovation sprints where we do workflow design and using design thinking, come up with new and different ways of doing things, whether that means using technology or not. We also have the city's We just passed the city's first data policy, citywide data policy. And so our data science and business intelligence manager doesn't work for IT. They work on my team because we are agnostic to department. We're all about continuous improvement and making things better for our residents, visitors, and businesses. And through doing that, we have been able to strike upon, I think, a pretty exciting approach. We do have an innovation fund. We do use seed different budget towards trying to solve challenges or problems, but then we kind of send it off to live in the department. You know, we really are the instigators for this. So for example, the city, when I came on board, had different data visual analytics tools, but didn't have one standard. And we decided, you know, here's the one through our evaluation that we think probably makes the most sense. Instead of pushing on everybody that they were required to do this training and required to use this tool, we picked up a few licenses using my budget. We actually had a part-timer who had just graduated from UC San Diego. He had never used this data tool. Tableau is what we ended up going with. But we put him through a series of trainings. And instead of just bringing in the Tableau folks to do mass trainings throughout the city, we had him go one-on-one. And it's how we created the Data Deputies program. One-on-one with people who wanted to learn. And he became the trainer and saved the city, you know, probably $50,000 to $75,000 in trainings. With the interesting part of this being they were using real live challenges and data sets. And so HR department was using HR data and solving a problem while learning. You know, Public Works was doing the exact same thing. And in just the span of a year, the demand was so high that we used up all those licenses. And we have doubled the number of licenses because we have a waiting list of people who want to take the training. And these aren't just analysts. Anyone at any level in the organization can learn how to use this tool.
At Tableau should be using the strategy at every agency.
Right. It's exciting. I mean, it's exciting to get, you know, hungry students who are going and teaching people that have been in government for 20, 25 years. But it's because it's that one-on-one that it's stickier and they're using.
Well, at the same time, when you can give a tool that actually creates some sort of different outcome that changes the trajectory, because data is so tough to get to sometimes and it's tough to visualize, and Tableau is pretty good at that. That's super powerful.
It is. The whole proof is in the pudding, right? You believe what you can see and what you can touch and taste and smell. And sometimes data and technology is a little bit difficult to do that with until you get people in the driver's seat.
Totally.
Sounds good. So tell us a little about the broadband and network strategy for the city of Carlsbad. You're once quoted as saying that cities should avoid building Frankenstein networks. Tell us what that is and how you avoided it, and what's great advice for cities today, especially those with the ARPA and infrastructure funding that's coming.
Well, the best way, like I said, when you see something, then you know it and you feel it and you touch it, is to say that we have had the Frankenstein of networks, where basically the use or the challenge has driven the network. This is a big shift in thinking that I think needs to occur in all organizations that isn't really there yet. You have your, you know, transportation department thinking we need to improve traffic, so we need traffic management system. And that's what they're all about, solving traffic, right? You have, let's see, your water utilities department. Okay, we need to make sure that we have SCADA so we can control how our systems work. Okay, they're solving their problem. Take the water meters, right? Advanced water meters. Hey, we can do leak detection. We can save money. We need advanced water meters. Nobody is starting by thinking first and foremost, what we need is not nobody. Those departments don't think what we need is a high speed, safe, secure, connected network that we can put anything on, because they don't think about each of those things being IoT. They are IoT, right? Or IOEs, we joke about it now, right? That's simply sensors. All this stuff needs to be connected and you need to be able to do something with that data. So when I came to Carlsbad, we had 9 different networks that the city was running on, because the application, the devices were what drove the connectivity. And that's where we turned everything upside down. And for those cities that can do the investment up front, you think first about how can we build out a high-speed municipal network for our purposes. Now, whether you're going to connect other people to that and consumers, that's up to you. And you know, that can get controversial. But building a high-speed municipal network for your own purposes is absolutely vital because it changes the whole conversation. You now can think about multi-use sensors and multi-use devices. You think about solving the challenge first, not, oh, what am I going to do to have to connect this? I'll give you a quick example. When about 10 years ago, Carlsbad built out its traffic signal network, which was one of the most advanced in the entire region, all put back to a centralized control center where they could do timing and do all that fun stuff. So you don't have the traffic engineers driving out and pushing buttons on a on a traffic signal. As I understand the story, the IT department and traffic didn't really get along too well back then. And so ultimately the traffic folks said, you know, forget this. The consultant says they can build out this whole wireless network for all of our traffic controllers. We don't need you IT or your expertise. And that's what they did, because they had the political momentum from the elected officials who people complained about traffic. So they're going to fix it. One thing that we have come to find out is, because it is a wireless network, and because at that time the cameras were not particularly high definition, so not high amounts of data, they had trouble getting to a particular area because there wasn't, you know, fiber or good backhaul. So they created a solar repeater that was wireless. Now it's Carlsbad, you know, it's Southern California, it's sunny most of the time. Do you know what happens when that solar repeater goes down? 2/3 of our network goes down. Oh, now, of course, you know, the folks that were designing it back then, you know, heard from the vendor, oh yeah, don't worry, it's mostly sunny. Yeah, but mostly sunny, particularly when we have used this exact same thing when there were wildfires in Carlsbad, it was
June gloom.
Situational awareness, you know, all of that sort of stuff, zero redundancy. And so now our strategy is, we fortunately had an agreement with a fiber provider that had 90% fiber already in the ground for our needs. We were able to leverage that for free because of a previous agreement and connected up all of our major facilities. We're now moving into the traffic network. Look, we had some facilities where at like 10 megabits per second, like wow. 10 megabits per second.
Oh, wow.
And now we're running gig and very, very high gig. Like our core network is lightning fast. We will be well served for many years. And so at some point you got to cure the sins of the past, but you got to do it.
Yeah. You can't just sit there and say, well, I guess this is what we got and this is all we got. So it's a good piece of advice for, you know, all right, accepting your weaknesses and your challenges and then finding a way through it. So
don't drive around Carlsbad on a cloudy day.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Dave, that leads into, naturally leads into the next thing we want to chat about, because of your recent win. You start connecting all those buildings, all those IoT sensors, you naturally are going to start getting, you know, a ton of data. And so, you know, we've heard about a recent win. You mentioned it a little bit earlier about the recent passage of the data policy. Talk to us about that, because every city is talking about what are they going to do? How are they going to do this? We'd love to learn more about how you did it.
For us, you know, fortunately, we spent time on the front end figuring out what we had before we got into the policy debates and aspects. So we did a citywide data inventory to figure out all the systems, all the streams, all the devices that were generating any sort of data. Based upon that analysis, we engaged with all the departments, based upon what the departments had done, and then looking at best practices around the country and what other folks were doing, we struck upon a policy that has really three tiers of support approval that kind of lays out that structure. I will say that when you do go and try to find a organization-wide data policy for a public agency, you'll find lots of open data policies. You won't find many citywide data policies.
Yeah.
Open data was supposed to be the big thing. Yeah, we're going to push all this data out and people are going to solve our problems for free. And it's great. I'm big on open data. Ours includes that. Oftentimes what we have found is the systems to be able to provide that rapidly in real time, regularly, quality data have really struggled in some places. And so we went the opposite direction. We wanted to grow from the ground up, do the inventory, create the policy, put a central point of contact. So we now have the assigned position of chief data officer, which is a role, not a position. So regardless of whether you have a chief data officer position, someone will be the chief data officer at the city of Carlsbad. Mm-hmm. That chief data officer does a runs a data governance team, which is made up of subject matter experts across all the departments. And they're the ones that every year are doing this annual data census to see what we have. Then they'll dig deeper into resolving issues regarding quality, et cetera. And I know that's getting a little bit in the weeds. The big part about it that I think is exciting is the city council wants to have their stamp on it, but there's really three tiers of this because you don't want to have to go back to city council every single time. And what they authorized was that the city manager had the ability to implement the broad vision. And so those are the three tiers. We have the broad vision of the city council. We then have the city manager with more administrative regulations regarding it, which can be changed without city council approval. And then we have really the operation side of it, which is that chief data officer doing the data census, doing the cross-departmental data work. And what we're seeing is already champions in the departments that are coming to us with their data challenges because awesome. They finally know who they can talk to. Awesome. That has been a big issue where people know there's a problem with the data, but they don't really know who to talk to. And this outlines very clearly with support from our leadership where they should go.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's incredibly important, especially people in local government. Sometimes you need that process or that structure in place just to help encourage people to take advantage of it. And oftentimes, you know, cities will rush into something where they set up a structure that forces them to go back to a council each and every time they want to try to amend something or do a new, you know, policy piece to it. So it's so critical that you had that structure set up from the very beginning. And so you can see how it's setting you up for success in the future. So now that it's passed, any sort of near-term projects on your horizon that you want to chat about or highlight that yeah. you're looking at?
Well, unfortunately, there's some of the most boring projects that you would ever imagine. Like we had to stand up. We have a long-term telecommuting policy that went into place during COVID. We moved from emergency to long-term. Of course, you needed the ability to have a way of approving those applications throughout the city. So we went to HR data. We built that. What did we find? Like, oh, there's some issues with this HR data. We then did a vaccination survey because that was required because we needed to know what our vax percentages were for our decision making. What did we find again? Oh my goodness, the same HR data has the same data quality issues that we ran into the other three or four projects. And so I knew at the very first project, this might be a problem with my data person. And at that time we were mid COVID. And I said, I want to deal with this now, but I don't think we have time because literally like we stood up a whole telecommute application portal going from the paper that they wanted to push to fully digital with all approvals in a day and a half.
Wow.
Those were the types of time frames that we were turning things around in. But I knew back then that we would run into this issue over and over. And so our focus is, and so what I told them this time is that's it. I'm done. We're getting everybody together. We're going to solve this problem because it's both process and a data problem. Where we are going is what are those core data sets that we're going to consistently be running into and running projects off of? And how do we fix the process and in the data collection, distribution, governance management, and publishing of that? So the city's permitting data, that's another area. What we're excited about is having people see that they are a part of the creation of data. It doesn't matter what your title is, what your role is. Now, one example I give is the field worker in public works that goes out, gets a ticket to go clean graffiti on a wall. They go out, they have their little tablet there. Yep, that's it. Clean the graffiti on the wall, punch that into their system. They think their job's done, right? This was just solely for them, a loop of, hey, go fix this. Yes, I fixed it. Send the information back. Done. Except for that flows up into a system that we can use around time management, analytics, and types of requests. And then we can use that information for a bunch of different things. Well, you spell graffiti wrong on there, or you put other instead of the graffiti tab, or a myriad of other things.
Hello.
And here we are on the back end solving a ton of problems. Now, when we explain and help people see that you are a vital part of the data collection in your day-to-day work, we're beginning to see the light bulbs go on and we're beginning to see people go, oh, I didn't know that. Or like one department, Oh yeah, we have an application for this in. Oh, it was kind of messed up. It's, you know what? Let's just do another one. And then you have a zombie application for the exact same building permit sitting in there.
Work with like, that.
And then you're doing analytics on what is your oldest permit that you haven't closed out? Oh, it's like 10 or 15 years. What? How can you not do a permit for 10 or 15 years? Turns out they turned it around within 90 days. And yet there's a zombie one there that they're like, oh, well, we don't need that. Right.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I love that.
Carlsbad, the land of zombie permits. I'm sure others have the same problem.
Though. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Funny you say that, Chris, because when, with my team, we have like, of course, our wall and our set of projects in queue. And I do have one on my list called City Zombies or City Employee Zombies. Who are these, you know, employees that are still in the system somehow walking around and said they haven't punched a time card in years. So I literally have a
that is the problem project on in an understandable awesome. Way of poor data. I mean, that's really it. So a different note, you're collaborating with David Ricketts and the Technology and Entrepreneurship Center at Harvard. Dom and I actually get to experience a little bit to help drive innovation and best practices across the country. Tell us about the program and, you know, how can those city leaders listening understand what it is and how to get involved?
It's sort of funny because, Dr. Ricketts comes from a PhD at Harvard. He teaches the innovation class there, one of the most popular classes. He gets people like, he had Penn Jillette from Penn and Teller speak to the class. I mean, I want to audit his class, frankly, but yeah. I don't think I could get into Harvard. Had Walter Isaacson on there, like the CTO of Ferrari. Like, these kids are spoiled, I'll just tell you that much.
David Graham.
Yeah, I did. I was slumming it with those folks. What was interesting was he was doing innovation work in the private sector, and he started getting connected more and more with cities, and he was doing these CIO summits out at Harvard. And I attended one year, and where we struck up a friendship was in that kind of typical Harvard fashion of like drilling into the truth and like debate is the way that you solve challenges and problems. We were talking about what we were doing in the city I was at the time around smart censored streetlights. And his statement to me was, "What's so smart about smart streetlights? I don't get it." And I was like, but doesn't everybody know this is stammering? So he and I, through those CIO summits, developed a friendship. And you know what tech is really designed of is with the idea of some of the greats that have come through Harvard, most of them who left and dropped out. You know, you're talking about the Zuckerbergs of the world, et cetera, who went to go make bajillions of dollars. This intersection of bringing innovation that has long kind of been a hallmark in the private sector, but is inconsistently applied in the public sector, he really got a heart for how do we bring these people together, equip them with innovative tools and innovation thinking. So through those CIO summits, what birthed out of that were a series of leaders who advised the center in cities around what could be next. And so about 2 years ago, the center launched the Civic Innovation Certificate, which is a three-part certificate program, executive certificate program in civic innovation. So you have Harvard folks that are teaching there. You have people like Grace Simmerall from Louisville, who's incredible teaching the data stuff. Kate Garman, when she was around. Jamie Cudden from Dublin. They somehow let me get in there once in a while. But the idea is bringing this brilliance of innovation principles together with what really has to happen in and around cities and public sector agencies. Where I think they're going next is we're coming out of COVID are some more of these small scale regional engagements like Dom was kind enough to host recently, where you're bringing together the folks that are doing the real work, as it were. Harvard has its mayor's program that Bloomberg funds out of the Kennedy School. That's great. And they're doing great work there. At the same time, what about others that are really kind of in the mix of needing to apply innovation? And these regional engagements, and Don can kind of provide his reaction, are intended to inspire and begin or accelerate the innovative work happening in cities. And I think next year there will be a both a US and European tour of that. There might even be another CIO summit or CIO-like summit. So you can stay tuned on that. You can just look up Harvard Technology and Entrepreneurship Center.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, just a shout out from my side, you know, David, we're able to obviously host you and Dr. Ricketts with a lot of our connective members here. And it was incredible. It opened the eyes of a lot of our practitioners. And to your point, it inspired them and has motivated them. What back end, everything that's happened since you came and provided that kind of workshop for us, it's cities are really moving. And so it's been a lot of fun to see kind of the excitement and the momentum that's been built. So highly recommend any city, any region reaching out and participating and bringing you all in. It was a lot of fun.
What I found, because a couple of years ago, we brought one of those CIO summits, one of the larger ones, to the San Diego region. And when you do that, it's so funny. You know, you see people that you've only spoke to on the phone before, yeah, or you've heard by name, you're seeing them in person. Also, it's that third party credibility coming in, because what is it? The prophet in his own home is never accepted, or something along those lines. So I don't know, Dom, you might be the technology messiah in the Phoenix region. You run into so many challenges, right? And so being able to convene like that really does, especially with his special approach, brings some really exciting things together.
Yeah, so much fun.
Well, if there was anything we could do to help you do more, whether it's opening doors or connections or someone that may be listening, what challenges are you trying to solve and how can we help?
Where I see broadly right now, and this is both connected to the center and to the region, we have just gone through a crisis and are still in the middle of it with the pandemic. That, you know, comes around once a century, right? We have seen people do extraordinary things that no one expected that they could do. I think there are folks that just look at themselves and their lives and their work and are amazed at what they have been able to accomplish. It would be a tragedy that on top of the tragedy of human life, if we were not to learn the lesson of our human capacity to do incredible things and use that to accelerate change for good in our communities, in our organizations, in our country, in our world. And I see, you know, things like this, being able to talk with all of you, friendship with Dom and others, this network of doers who are equipped to share and to accelerate change for good. I think about the digital divide work that you guys are doing in the Phoenix metro area and in Arizona, the kids that did not have connectivity to the internet, that have had educational impacts that have occurred, you know, people that now are equipped with incredible amounts of knowledge because they have connectivity and they're not having to listen to the beeps and bytes of an old AOL modem, right? That's, you know, it is just think about this. Think about, I was just at an event yesterday and in the ballroom of this economic development event for the north part of our county, I had zero cell service. And the panic that I had sitting in that room when I finally realized that my texts were not going through to my wife and to my boss and like all those sorts of things. And I was like, what? Ah! What if that was your feeling every day?
Every day. Yeah.
Wow. Every single day. The frustration.
Or if you didn't even know what you were missing.
Right.
Because there's just access, and not having that, you're not getting the skills that others are. You're just losing in comparison. Not just the anxiety of not being connected.
Yeah. Think about folks that were told, okay, you can work remotely and they have an hour-long commute. And here are the basic requirements of what you need to be able to do. And they're like, I can't. And so you're driving an hour into work every single day while your colleagues are, you know, remotely working. It all circles back to your earlier definition or question about smart cities. Connected communities and connectivity is what it's all about. And I applaud the work you all are doing on bridging the digital divide and addressing digital equity in your region. I think that's a big area for us to continue to accelerate learning into this next year and beyond. And just the fun and the energy of the folks that I was with in your Phoenix area, there's a lot to bring to bear.
Awesome. Great. Well, we look forward to that.
Yeah, for sure. Need to do some more of that engagement. How about just people that have helped you along the way? We know people, you can't do it on your own. Is there anyone you want to call that you're particularly appreciative of? And selfishly for us, as you know about the urban complex, if you think they're a good fit for the show, we'd like to know that too.
Oh man, so many people. One is my current boss who I worked for in another organization, Scott Chadwick, the city manager. I think in the innovation space as it relates to land use, which I spent a lot of time working in, Bill Fulton, who is going to be retiring from working at the Kinder Institute, who was mayor of the city of Ventura and then planning director for the city of San Diego. Brilliant mind as it relates to community and community building. Dr. Ricketts, which I'll try to convince him to come on. I'm sure he would be happy to. He is a tremendous person. Grace Simmerall in Louisville, Kentucky. Wonderful woman who's done amazing things in the data space there and continues to inspire. I think that Stephanie Wade, who just recently left the Bloomberg Foundation and Bloomberg Philanthropies and is now doing work with the new center at Johns Hopkins related to cities, who's headed up by another incredible person, Amanda Daflos, who used to be with the city of Los Angeles. They would be tremendous. Jeannie Holm, deputy mayor now, who was instrumental in City of Los Angeles's data policy and work. And then last year's, or this year, 2021's innovator, basically innovator in residence at Harvard Tech, Kip Harkness, who always brings his Zen master approach to problem solving. And he's phenomenal. I could go through an entire list because there are people that are peers that I look to and others that have done phenomenal work. And I think be happy to send them all your way.
Looking outward, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Kidding. Like that was just roll off the tongue. That was great. I'm just looking at Don like, oh my gosh, he just keeps going. That's great.
Got a list for the year now, Chris. We're set.
I know.
And don't forget Jen Sanders in Dallas. Yeah.
We'll have to have her back on. We'll have to have us all on together one time, hopefully in person somewhere. Do a live show.
Love it.
All right. Well, David, this was awesome. With that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, David Graham, Chief Innovation Officer, City of Carlsbad, California. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's been my absolute pleasure.
Always a pleasure, David. Great to see you.
The Greater Phoenix Economic Council, known as GPEC, was named the top economic development organization in the U.S. in 2020. As a data-driven regional organization, GPEC serves as a strategic partner to companies across the world as they expand or relocate to other markets. Over the past 31 years, GPEC has fueled the Greater Phoenix economy by helping more than 850 companies and creating more than 154,000 jobs. Leaders in Greater Phoenix are building the nation's most innovative and connected smart region through The Connective. This community-driven applied research model deploys technology at scale. For more information about GPEC, visit gpec.org.
All right, Chris, that's David Graham. What did you think?
You know, it's hard to paraphrase what you hear when someone knows their stuff so much like David.
So good, right?
Yeah, exactly. In the theme of what sticks out and things that resonate to me, I would say he was talking about designing for multi-use. I see that all the time as well, whether it's in the government world where one agency does it one way and another agency does it a different way. And you're like, why do they do it different ways when they could leverage each other? Or within a same entity, like why does the traffic group design one way and the water group design another way? And the other group does, like, because if you design similarly, you could reuse and you could get more scale and cut down costs, cut down time. I just thought that what they're doing there is awesome. And that jumped out as the most important thing to me.
Totally. What a great piece of advice there. Hard to do, but if you can,
it is hard to do. That's why.
But, But again, I think that's why, you know, we talk a lot about structure of organization and roles and why his position, both looking internally and externally to drive that innovation, is really important and a good piece of advice for cities. You know, there's three things kind of I really latched on to besides that governance model. Well, a little bit about that, but the importance of putting people first and having fun doing it too. Citizen engagement, community engagement doesn't have to be lame and boring and, you know, full of just public meetings. Like, why not have a block party for streetlights, right? I mean, that was just an awesome story.
It takes DJ to know to have a block party.
Totally. But I know a lot of our communities latched on when he brought that example to you know, Arizona a few weeks ago when he was here. I just think that's, you know, put the people first and go hear about what they need, what their challenges are, and how can your technology actually help their daily lives. I thought that was huge. I also thought, again, going back to the governance and structure and how critically important that is, to make sure you put some time up front in thinking about that, how he's done it with the policy, the data policy. So that way it's given, you know, the overall policy to the council, the operational authority to the city manager, then just the technical day-to-day operations to the data chief data officer. That's critical.
As well as the thought about the stakeholders to put the data in the first time so it's right, so it doesn't have downstream effects where you get the zombie piece. Like, so they're really looking at it holistically, the policy side, so it cuts down time, the way the stakeholders make it work, the way that they'll get good data. I thought the holistic picture was pretty important.
Yeah, so you can see it's created the platform and the framework to set it up for success. So then last piece that I just want to hit on is that, you know, what he said towards the end and what he's enjoyed being able to network with cities, and we have to learn the lesson of our human capacity. And the idea of this collaboration is the competitive advantage. Again, it's a huge piece of advice, I think, for everyone here. You've all done great things. Your head has been down. You've recovered from the pandemic, but tell your story. Because if we don't learn from each other.
And listen to other stories and learn and be open to what's out there. It's like, and like this innovation convening that he did, that you brought in to here to the Phoenix Valley. Like, that's what that was all about, is setting, getting people focused on the here and now, getting them ready to tell their stories, and then creating a convening where they bring forward things they want to talk about, make it structured so that there's something of action where everyone gets something. And then commit that you're gonna do it too. I thought it was really well designed for telling the story and taking action as well.
Yeah. What a great guest. We'll have to have David out quite often.
For sure. And we got to take him up on doing it in person somehow.
Yep.
Well, so Cracks in the Pavement. I know you've got an article. Tell us what's about. Let's kick it off.
Yeah, we're excited because I know David mentioned some of the stuff we're doing around digital equity, but this one, especially with our sponsor and partner, Worldwide Technology, they just released a blog about a project and program that we did in collaboration with Intel, the Digital Equity Institute, which is a new organization we're standing up, Geeks Without Frontiers, in Arizona State University, to help technically support the refugee population and community within the region, specifically within Phoenix. We worked with the Welcome to America Project, who helps provide resources to refugees newly reestablished in Phoenix. And so we're helping them understand the technology challenges and create a holistic plan that not only provides hardware to these refugees, but then also looks at how might we provide digital literacy training, 365-day, 24/7 tech support, and other resources.
Looks like access, tutoring, learning apps. So cool.
It's really cool to see, especially Worldwide Technology and Intel. We had Dan on recently.
I was going to say, you know, does that mean N50s down to N48 now?
Yeah, definitely. But it's great to see these corporate partners stepping up to make a difference in the communities, especially with the most vulnerable population. So they were out last week handing out these 100 laptops, Dell technology laptops with like Intel Core processing to these refugees, helping them boot it up. Intel, another challenge is they speak like 15 plus different languages. So Intel sent out their employees who speak all these languages to help them understand how to launch the computer, get it set up. And the next part, as we look forward, is again, really wrapping around these digital literacy and curriculum services. And I mean, what was really excited is among the first recipients, is if you read the article, were these two brothers who intend to use them not only to improve the literacy in language as well as technology, but also to obtain employment. One of them studying to go into business while the others has a passion for music. So it was just great to see the impact that, you know, this program led by Worldwide Technology and Intel is really having on these individuals. So it's
Interesting. I was just at lunch today and I was talking to someone and they're telling me a story about how they had a tech challenge. They had to bring in their laptop and at the same time their iPhone kind of went kaput. So they had to take it in the iPhone. And they also were sick and they were worried they had to go get COVID tested. So they called the state, they called their city, and guess what? It's all an online process.
Holy.
Like, wait a second, but my computer's broken and my phone's broken. I'm not going to have, and they were freaking out. So imagine a person that A doesn't even access, like, so refugees, and here such a program that opens the door, gets people settled. It just shows a lot of us take for granted what people are struggling with every day and why this stuff's so important. Like being able to access jobs, being able to get access skills, being able to access the ability to translate for a refugee something into their language so they can understand the land they just moved to. So yeah, it's an amazing program
for sure. Yeah, we're excited that it's a part of this new really we think innovation model around the Digital Equity Institute that we're going to launch here in January 13th at the Smart Region Summit. But we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. So excited to tell all about it.
Well, cool. For that, that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Have a happy new year. We'll see you soon.
Yep. Happy new year.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.